time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36. I was on the fence about pregnancy and all I heard was, you need to make a decision before your ovaries dry up. And, but children will give your life such purpose. Now I'm pregnant though, it's holidays will never be the same again, you know. Yeah, I do know. Thanks. But despite deciding to baby, there's still so much more to find out from both camps. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I chat to baby wanters, baby rejecters and everything in between to see why we decide to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I chat to Lorraine about her experience as a black mum and life as a doula.
With the nature of our health service at the moment, we don't get the continuity of care that we need when we are on the journey of becoming parents, from the moment of finding out all the way through to bringing your baby home, knowing that there's someone there that you can talk through about all of those experiences and not have to repeat the story if you're seeing a different midwife or you're seeing a different consultant.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend in the world, Camilla.
Hiva, piva.
If anyone's not listened to the podcast before. Just to clarify, a couple of weeks ago, Camilla said she struggled with knowing what to say and how to say hi at the start of the episode. And last week I said, hey, why don't you say it in a different language? What? Can you do it again?
Hiva, piva.
What language is this, please?
Finnish.
Oh, amazing. Apologies to anyone from Finland.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, the pronunciation is not that. I feel like I've listened to it a few times, but I've still forgotten exactly how to do it. But I liked the look of it.
Oh, well done. Good research. Good going. Can we do this every week?
Yeah, a new one next time. Yeah.
Okay, fabulous. Now I want to talk to you about something because I was very excited to start antenatal classes, and I've got a WhatsApp group with antenatal people in it, and that makes me feel like a real life adult.
Oh, it is so lovely though. It is really good.
Yeah, but one of the things that came up in our first antenatal class actually was the pain. Obviously, of childbirth. So they talk about the kind of build up and the different stages of labor. But the bit when the baby is crowning and they did a quiz and they asked us, how do they describe effectively your vagina as the baby's head is crowning? And they describe it as a ring of fire because it burns, burns, burns.
Can you sing the song?
Producer Paul, this is where I put the song in.
Insert clip now.
And it burns, burns, burns. The ring of fire. The ring of fire.
So this is the point where you are at risk of the perineal tear.
Mm-hmm.
And so, honestly, I feel like as the woman who leads the antenatal classes was telling us all this, everyone is like holding their breath and going, oh, gosh, look. I feel like the baby went back up and in a little bit if it was anywhere near down there at the prospect of it. So, obviously, I know all this is going to happen. I know that childbirth is painful and I know that you're at risk of a perineal tear. And yes, I'm going to do that massage thing where you put oil on it and you kind of try and stretch it out beforehand. Sorry if that's TMI, but...
I didn't. I probably should have.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't. I probably should have.
Did you rip?
Did I tear? Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Did you have to have stitches?
Naomi, can't you remember? I had to have about four doctors put their finger up my a-hole.
Oh,
to check that I'd not torn through. Oh my God. It was like, I need a second opinion and a third opinion and a fourth opinion. I was like, why don't you just invite the whole hospital in here to put their finger up my ass?
Okay, so can I just check? So, do you know what? I probably have erased this from my mind for fear.
Oh, maybe.
Did you have to have stitches?
Yeah, quite a lot.
Oh, God, I don't remember this at all.
Naomi, Chester came out with his hand on his head. Like, you know, like if you're lying back and you're putting your arms behind your head.
Oh, God.
He had one hand behind his head, so his elbow was sticking out. And they said the tear wasn't that bad. It was just unusual because of his positioning. He was so chill when he came out. I know. But I was so high on gas and air that that bit didn't really bother me very much.
Mm. Okay.
Well, and I did ask for a design of vagina.
This. Well, I suppose you. I think that's quite common.
What, that people ask that?
Yeah.
Oh.
I can't believe I don't remember that about you, but I can believe that I don't remember that about you because I think I just don't want to think about the pain. But even more so since Mum decided the other day to tell a story about our childhood and the fact that I had a really terribly low pain threshold when having my hair brushed versus you.
Yeah.
And growing up, you had a really high pain threshold and I was a massive wimp. And I'm like, this is a cool story, Mum. Thanks for telling me this now. I know I've got to push a baby out.
I didn't know she thought that in general. Like, I knew about the hair thing because I can remember you, like, properly making a fuss when Mum used to brush your hair.
I fucking hated having my hair brushed. But I don't know if that necessarily means that I'm going to be bad at childbirth, but it has made me worried that I will because you were quite chill about childbirth.
Well, I suppose I was chill about it to an extent. But
yeah.
It's a pain like no other pain. So you can't even compare, like you definitely can't compare it to having your hair brushed. Jesus. You like brush my hair with knots in all day.
Please explain in your own words your parenting situation.
So I am mummy to one little lady who is three. She's just turned three. I live at home with her and her daddy, my partner, James. She is a feisty little individual who knows her own mind.
And like her mother.
Planned her. It's a whirlwind of 3 years.
And also, I feel like it's like some kind of weird circle of life thing, because now not only have you brought your own life into the world, but you are effectively responsible, at least in a small part, for helping other people bring their babies into the world because you're now a doula.
I am, yes. Yeah, it's very weird because I became a doula at the beginning of this year, literally 2 weeks before lockdown happened. So it's been a very strange transition from being kind of full-time working mum to being at home with a three-year-old and trying to set up a new business and help people at the same time. So yeah, it's very weird, but nice. I'm enjoying it.
Just for anyone who goes, I don't really know what a doula is. Can you explain doulas?
Yeah, it's a weird one because I guess the phrase when you look up a doula is a mothering the mother. So it's kind of that person that looks after you while you're looking after your baby, essentially. But there's so much more to it. As a doula, I'm there from the very beginning of your journey all the way through to when you bring your baby home. We support you antenatally, so as you're preparing to give birth to your child. We support during birth, so we can be there while you're actually having your baby, whether that's at home, in a hospital, out in a field with all the sheep. It doesn't really matter. And then we support postnatally as well. And I think that's the bit for me at the moment that I'm finding a lot of women are really looking for, because then they haven't got that social support network around them in the same way that they would normally. And as much as I'm not able to kind of be in someone's house, a lot of what we do as doulas is emotional support and creating the space for you to talk about your experiences, talk about how you're feeling as a new parent, be able to have conversations without feeling any judgment or wondering what kind of advice someone's going to give. As a doula, we don't give advice. It's, you know, we signpost information that's relevant for you and that helps you to make choices that are right for you. It's so varied, and there's so many things I think as a doula that we offer that people just have no idea. And I often say a doula is the support that you don't realize that you need until you need it.
Do you know what I think my take on it from, because obviously you are one of my best friends, and so you've kind of been my unofficial doula with additional bits of support here and there throughout. Do you know what I think it feels like? It feels like a guardian angel. It's like, you know, the cartoon thing where you have the angel and the devil on your shoulder, and yeah. A doula's role is to play the angel to kind of guide you and go, this is okay, and you're doing okay, and you're doing a good job, and here's some information that you might need, and here's what might be helpful to you personally right now.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is that being able to home into your specific needs. I think there's a lot of reading that we do as new parents or parents to be, and it's quite generic. You know, every situation, every journey, every pregnancy is so different, and so knowing that there's someone there that can help you specifically with yours can really open up some things that you may never have known before. And also just supporting you that whatever choices you make are the choices that are right for you.
Some people will say, well, isn't that what a midwife's for? Isn't that why you have a midwife? But it is slightly different, because somebody who is in a medical role, although, you know, my experience so far with the midwives who have been in charge of my care thus far have been amazing. There's a feeling of when those people are medical, that maybe you can't just go to them with your day-to-day worries and woes, and you can go to them with a medical question, but anything else, it is kind of like, well, you know, yes, you can go to your friends, and yes, you can go to your family, but the doula almost is that hybrid of the two.
Yeah. And it's that we haven't got an agenda. You know, we're not there to look after your medical needs. We're not medically trained. So a lot of the support that we give isn't about the medical side. And it is kind of bridging that gap, like you're saying, between friends who might have opinions and want to offer you advice, and then a medical team that are responsible for the safety of you and your baby. It gives that point of difference in terms of if you're told something by someone from a medical point of view, but it doesn't necessarily feel right to you, a doula might be able to signpost different information that your medical professional might not have given to you, because they're just looking at it from one perspective. And it's that rounding, I guess, so that you have got all of the information so that you can make informed choices. And I think with the nature of our health service at the moment, we don't get the continuity of care that we need when we are on the journey of becoming parents, from the moment of finding out all the way through to bringing your baby home, knowing that there's someone there that you can talk through about all of those experiences and not have to repeat the story if you're seeing a different midwife or you're seeing a different consultant.
Well, do you know what? That's one thing that I'm a bit nervous about, actually, because I'm fairly confident that so obviously I've just had to register with a new midwife in Bristol because we've moved. But also I don't get to go to the hospital before I give birth. So yeah. I'm not due any more scans or anything else. So I will never have set foot in that hospital, and I can't at the minute because of all the coronavirus restrictions. And also I won't have probably met any of the people who are going to help me in a position where I actually feel, or I imagine I'm going to possibly feel, the most vulnerable I've ever felt in my life.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be really scary and daunting, even when you have the ability to go into a hospital and see where you're possibly going to give birth. That in itself can be quite scary because it makes it really real. But not knowing who's going to be in that room with you when you're potentially naked with your vagina out, like you kind of want to know who that person is. So as a doula, and I guess as a birth partner, knowing that there's at least two people that are in your corner is something that can offer so much comfort. And the biggest thing about labouring is to feel safe and comfortable, to allow your body to progress through labour the way that it's meant to, allow the hormones that help to bring baby this side of the world. You need to feel that way. So being in a room full of strangers isn't really going to make you feel as elated as you probably would if, you know, you're in the room with people that you've met before.
That's so funny you talk about the being naked thing and having your vagina out, because that hadn't even crossed my mind. But now I'm like, oh, maybe like as a doula, do you do training? Like, okay, so this week you're going to show me your boobs and we're going to be okay with that.
Yeah, we don't, like, at the moment, having obviously video calls, I don't ask my clients to get naked so that they feel comfortable in front of me.
Flash me.
I just hope that happens.
So my nipple just lactated.
Me and Dan had been to the seaside for the day, and I was wearing like a little white camisole top. And thanks to the joys of pregnancy, yes, your nipples do get quite dark. And so I, instead of wearing a bra, I'd worn these like little sticker things that go over your nipples. Think Janet Jackson when Justin Timberlake exposed her boob at the Super Bowl, only less jazzy than that. They're just like skin coloured sticker things. Anyway, I took the sticker off when we got back from the beach, which is quite painful. It's like a plaster. And inside it, so I don't know if the sticker had created like a suckling effect, was some kind of nipple leakage. Shit's getting real.
So what made you decide that you wanted to do this? Like, was your own birth a thing that made you, because you didn't have a doula, did you?
No, I didn't know. It was I found out about doulas before I had Thea. It was while I was pregnant, but before I actually had her, I thought I wanted to become a midwife. I'd always been really intrigued about the whole journey of becoming a parent and what happens to our bodies. Just amazed that, you know, as women we can do the things that we do and growing a human and then giving birth to them. It's always been something that I thought there's something there that really resonates with me. So when I was pregnant, obviously I did all the reading, read all the books, watched all the programs, and I was just like, yeah, I want to be a midwife. And then I came across the term doula, and I was just like, oh, that kind of sounds like a midwife, but there's something different here. And I guess the difference was that actually, as a doula, you're a companion to that person. You're not there from a medical point of view. You're someone there to talk to, and it's a very different role. So then through my experience of seeing several different midwives, having different midwives at the birth, feeling like I was informed, but not to the point where I felt like I could make decisions, that for me kind of really hit home that I needed that support there, that someone that said, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to do this. And the biggest thing for me was that I ended up having an induction. And like I said, I'd done all the reading. I thought, you know, I know what happens in induction. I know what happens from a hormone point of view. I know what the implications are of, you know, possibly how my labour could progress. And it very much felt like that was the way to go. That was the only way to go. I was 42 weeks and, you know, it was, you're going to, you know, things are going to happen because baby's not here on the due date. And if someone had just said to me, babies don't have a clock, they don't have a calendar, they don't know when they're meant to be born, and that actually in different countries around the world, there are different points in the pregnancy that are considered your full term, it would have just changed my thinking a little bit. And it was just, that's what solidified it for me, that actually I wanted to do something that actually meant that people felt empowered in their journeys rather than just informed. And I think that sometimes what we receive is we receive a load of information, but it's what we do with that information and being able to make the right choices for us. So,
and it's a bit like I said to you earlier, it's, you can fill yourself with information that you get from books and friends and other people's stories, but actually a lot of, you know, the majority of the information that you get is from a medical source. I remember telling you that I was pregnant and you being like, oh, have you, you know, thought about a birth plan? I was like, well, now I just go to the hospital and I'll just do what the doctors tell me. And I thought, no, because I thought, like, I thought, oh, that's just what you do. And your midwife tells you this is what's best. And you effectively, it's the people pleasing goody two shoes in me that goes, oh, okay, well, I just do as I'm told. And like, I slip straight back into that, like, oh, okay, well, they know best. They're going to tell me what to do. And then since being pregnant and doing my own reading and speaking to lots of people, there are things that I go, oh, well, is that the best thing to do? So for example, induction, I know is a massive, I have known so many people who were pregnant who really were anti-induction. And I was really like, I don't understand why you're anti-induction, but obviously there are reasons that people are. So like for you, why do you look back and think, I wish that I hadn't done that?
I think it was because part of me in my head, I was thinking, I just want to wait till the baby's ready. And it felt like there was a lot of pressure to meet that estimated due date. Like, you'll find as soon as that date comes around, people are messaging you and saying, is the baby here yet? Have you had any twinges? What's going on? And it's just like that pressure of delivering this baby on that date, because that's all you have to work to. From the moment that you kind of find out and have that appointment with the doctor, it's like, that's when the baby's going to come. So even yourself, you feel that pressure. And I got impatient. I was like, you know, I really want to meet this baby. But then I also knew the consequences of having an induction and what that would do for the rest of the journey. And I wanted to have a very hands-off, natural birth in a pool. And there were a lot of things that changed because of that induction process. I think there's definitely things that happened in my labour that probably wouldn't have happened if I hadn't had an induction, but you just never know. Like, my contractions were thick and fast from the moment that they started. But I felt like in the first couple of hours, like, we were managing it. And I'd actually say that I was enjoying it.
James, you psycho.
I was waiting for that. But James, no, but and
do you know what? One of my friends is like, please can I come on your podcast? Sally, she's like, please can I come on your podcast? Yeah. Because labour was the best experience of my life and I absolutely loved it and I want to tell people that I loved it. And her sister, Suze, is like, no, because I don't think you're representative of like the general population, so you might lure people into a false sense of security.
Yeah, singing and dancing through labour and things like that. You do see it though, you do. When you see people who are in the place that they want to be in, whatever that looks like, and they look elated, they look like, oh my God, I'm doing this and my body's doing this, and they're so in tune with themselves. And I think that's the bit that I enjoyed. It was just me and James. I was having a bath. Every time I had a contraction, I literally pulled him towards me and we'd like hung on to it. But it was such an intimate moment. And it was all the things that I wanted to feel, being able to feel the contractions, being able to feel my body doing what it was, you know, meant to be doing. It just felt amazing, more than any of the pain or discomfort that I felt. It just felt like, this is real. My baby is coming and I can feel it happening. So I think that enjoyment piece is probably more that you've been waiting for this moment and now it's here.
But so from that point, so you experienced that bit of, oh my God, this is amazing, this is going well, slash, and I'm using the loosest of inverted commas when I say this is going to plan-ish. Yeah. I don't know if what went wrong is the right question, but kind of what went wrong?
Yeah, what changed, I guess.
Yeah.
When I was in those kind of early, I say early labour, but it didn't feel like early labour. It felt like it went from nothing to everything. I lost my mucus plug. And at that point, I'd started bleeding. And it wasn't like all the way through pregnancy. I said, you know, if there's, you know, bright red bleeding at any point, then it might be something that needs to be looked at. And I'd said to the midwife, something doesn't feel right. Like, at this bleeding doesn't feel right. And she was like, no, it's fine, it's absolutely fine. Didn't check me. And I just said to James, I was like, it feels like it's gone from okay to excruciating. And something just didn't feel right. So then at that point, the midwife said, oh, you know, you can go down to the labor room now, to the delivery suite, and there's a birthing pool in there, which was part of the plan. I wanted to birth in water. And I was like, oh yeah. I didn't realize that was still an option. And like, yeah, it's fine. So we moved off the ward down there, and this is the bit that gets really, really hazy. And I just remember us getting all our stuff in, getting in the pool, and I was just like, why can't I get comfy? Like, I'd been in the bath on the ward, and I was like, yeah, this is great, and I thought it'd be exactly the same in the pool. And I got in the pool, and I was just like, I couldn't get comfortable. It just felt like the contractions were nonstop. And then I was like, okay, I'll have some gas and air. And it was then that everything changed. I had probably two or three pulls in the gas and air, and I was delirious, like literally out of this world. Couldn't tell you what my name was. James was looking at me like I was a space cadet. I felt like a space cadet. And he started laughing, and then I could see his face change, and it was just like, oh my God, what has happened? Like, I was out of my body, and it was the weirdest feeling. I'd lost all sense of control at that point, and it freaked me out. And then I continued to bleed, and I was obviously bleeding quite heavily in the pool. So they're like, you're going to have to get out. So I just remember, and it felt like it was just like a cold table. It was a bed, but it felt like a cold steel table that I was lay on, and there was just blood everywhere. And I remember saying, I really need a wee. So I got up, went to the toilet, and there was just blood everywhere. But in my little weird drugged up state. I was then getting tissue and trying to wipe all the blood up off the toilet and off the floor. And it was just like, what am I doing? And then from there, I don't really remember, but it was at that point I was like, I want an epidural. And James was like, that was the last thing that you wanted. I was like, give me an epidural right now. And he was just like, are you sure? And I was like, I cannot cope with feeling this out of control. I don't know what's happening with the bleeding. No one seems to know what's going on. People are rushing in and out the room. And it just felt scary. But then I had the epidural and I was happy as Larry. I had always said I didn't want an epidural. I didn't want any kind of pain relief apart from gas and air. And then the gas and air sent me loopy and the epidural made me feel amazing. And I think the reason that I can look back on my birth experience and see it as a positive is because I took back control, that control that I lost that made me feel really, really scared. I decided that in that moment, the thing that I needed was to take back control. And that for me was that epidural. And like my mum and James were in the room and their experiences were so different. They were obviously so worried about the amount of blood that I was losing. I'd gone into a happy place and I felt more in control. I could still feel the contractions when they were happening, which was really important to me because I didn't want to be coached to push. I wanted to feel it naturally. In my head, it happened. I had the epidural and then an hour later I had the, but apparently it wasn't that quick. But
well, that's good that it was for you, though.
It was, in my head, that's what it was.
I think we potentially established in the intro I'm not going to be one of those people, but I really want to be one of those people who sing and dance their way through childbirth.
Who does that?
Well, I am putting a playlist together of... So I'm going to do two playlists. Did you do a playlist?
Yeah, but do you know what happened?
What?
I feel like I don't want to tell you this. Don't get too concentrated on your playlist because I couldn't play my playlist.
What do you mean you couldn't play it?
Well, we were trying to connect it to the thing and it wouldn't work. So I ended up listening to Hits Radio. And that's why I nearly gave birth to I'm Blue, Dabin, Dee, Dabin, Die. Which, to be honest, did take my mind off the pain somewhat.
That's true. Well, I'm going to definitely make sure that whatever happens, there is a way that I can definitely 100% listen to the playlist.
No, I would recommend not and literally go for Hits Radio.
No.
Honestly.
I work in radio. It's not the same for me. I don't enjoy it in the same way.
When you're high on gas and air and someone's playing Ghetto Superstar, followed by Return of the Mac, etc., etc., and you're just thinking of like being 16 years old and trying to get into clubs and dancing and stuff, it took my mind off it.
No, but I want my own songs that I want. So I want, like, there's going to be old school Backstreet Boys on there that's going to take me back to being 14. You know what I'm like, Mil?
But remember, don't get too fixated on things because they might not happen.
I am the person who went to see David Guetta at a club in Ibiza and paid £50 to get in and took my headphones and listened to my own music in the club.
Did you actually do that?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So you say now that you can look back and see your birth as a positive experience. Was there a time when you couldn't look back at your birth and see it as a positive experience?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it felt so different to what we had planned. That was a bit that didn't feel positive to me, you know, that I didn't have the water birth that I wanted. I didn't go drug-free. I wasn't able to get up and move around because I had all of those things that were different to the plan felt really, really negative to me. And I think the work that I've done as a doula and studying to support others, I've had to look at my birth experience and just understand how I feel about it. And actually, that moment of taking back control and having that epidural was the moment I felt the most empowered. And from that point, it was positive. And that's why I see it as positive. I think if I had known that, you know, I could go a couple more weeks without having to have an induction, or, you know, there was different ways that we might have been able to bring labour on, then maybe the beginning part would have felt more positive. But overall, I did have that moment of taking my birth back for me, and plans do change. As much as we want to have a plan and it happens the way that we want to, it's labour and it's birth and it's babies and it's bodies and it's us. It doesn't necessarily go that way. So it's knowing that that's okay. And actually in those moments, it's what you do when the plans change rather than that the plans have changed that are the biggest thing.
And do you know what? That's one of the things that I think makes me reluctant about having a birth plan, because I know I am a control freak and I am a perfectionist. And so, you know, if I make the, and I'm stubborn as hell, so if I make a decision of like, this is what I want to do, that I would then have the battle. And the only thing I can compare it to, which is not comparable, but the only thing in my, as a point of reference for me, would be my wedding day. And I had such high anxiety around my wedding day. To be fair, the timing of the wedding fell at a time when there was quite a lot of high anxiety in my life generally. But I remember being fucking tipped over the edge by the fact that the desserts hadn't come out before the evening guests got there. And in the grand scheme of life, who gives a shit? Like, yeah. I look back at that now and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, why did you flip out so much yeah. about the bloody desserts being delayed? But at that time, because you've got this plan and you want everything to go well, and I think as well in the wedding thing, again, it's the people pleaser thing. You want everyone else to be happy, and I wanted everybody else to be having the perfect time. But equally, in my birth, if I've kind of planned these things for me, for Dan, and for the baby, then my fear is that I do a birth plan, and it inevitably, because so many people will say to you, you'll do a birth plan, but again, it's in those loose inverted commas, because anything can happen and you have to have that flexibility. And with me, it's kind of being able to find the line between having an idea of what I would like to happen, but having the flexibility to go with it.
Yeah. And I think it is. It's when you, in day-to-day life, you want to be in control, and actually that control gives you a sense of comfort and reduces your anxiety. It's natural to want a birth that goes that way, but knowing that it necessarily isn't can be scary as well. I always say to my clients that you shouldn't make one birth plan. I always say plan A, B, and C. So plan A is ideally how you want things to go. And then if things go off a little bit, then you've got plan B, and you already know what that next step is. So you're building a bigger plan than just this is how I want it. And also, making a birth plan isn't about necessarily dictating how you want your birth to go, but it's setting you up to have the best possible experience that you can. And that is really important, because it's that saying, if you don't believe in anything, you'll fall for everything. And it's the same for your birth. If you don't have any ideas of what birth looks like for you, then you could end up doing a load of things that don't feel right to you in the situation. And once you're in it, it's really hard to then change that. Think of it this way: the only person that matters is you and how you feel in that situation. So if there's one person that you want to please in your birth, it's you. And listen to yourself, listen to your body, and use that to kind of be right, this is not feeling right, and it was in my plan, but I know what we can do next. And if worst case scenario happens, then at least I already know what that situation needs to look like for me.
Yeah, I need to channel bossy, feisty Naomi, who sometimes hides away, but when she comes out, oh boy, do you fucking know.
Oh, I've seen that girl loads of times. I'll get her out.
The devastation is real. So not only lately have I weighed myself, and I weigh obviously the most I've ever weighed because I'm pregnant, but still I look at the scales and go, oh, how has this happened? I decided, because the weather had changed, to go through, I've got a box of, since we moved house, box of clothes, it's got a load of old stuff in it, found a t-shirt dress that used to be one of my old baggy t-shirt dresses. That's what was definitely going to fit me in pregnancy. This would be wicked, nice and comfy. I look like a badly packed sausage in it. It's not good. What's happening? Now, one thing that I wanted to ask you about, and we talked about this on the phone before because I was really awkward and weird about it. I was like, I want to talk to you about your experience as a black mother and how that potentially differs. And I was like, but I feel weird about it. Like, am I going to say the wrong thing? Is that even an acceptable question to ask? And you were like, yes, it totally is an acceptable question to ask.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's a lot that I guess I've taken on over the years and not even realised that I have taken it on. And it's probably had an impact on who I am, and especially who I am as a mother. Like, we had the conversation about when you first met Thea, and we went to a cafe. And Thea is really, really light skinned. She, especially when she was a baby, she was really light. And you were holding her. And it was like people looking at you as if you were a mum. And I was sat there, obviously, as a black woman holding a white baby, essentially, to them. And I do. Yeah. I still see it now. I see the double looks and the, oh, what's that situation? Unless I'm with James, and then they kind of work it out.
But also, you said about Thea being, didn't she come back from the childminders and said to you, "Mummy, I'm white," or something along those lines?
Yeah, so I can't remember why it happened, but she came back and we were just chatting as we do, how's your day? She's like, "You know, Mummy, you're brown and I'm white." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And she was two. I was just like, how are we having this conversation already? And I explained it to her, but obviously to her, she is. She's white. She's very, very fair. And to her, I'm brown. But there was nothing more to it than that. And then just the other day, we were with our friend, mutual friend's daughter, Ava. And Ava is black, and she is darker than Thea. And they were sat in the back of the car, and I was listening to them chat away. And Ava went, "Yeah, you're white." And Thea's like, "Yeah, you're brown." And then Ava's like, "No, but you're a little bit brown as well." And Thea was like, "A little bit, but I'm really white." And I was just like, just that conversation. And it was as innocent as that. There was nothing more to it. Yeah. But it was just a reflection of, I'm looking at you and I'm looking at the colour of your skin. It was weird. It made me feel like, how are they old enough to be having this conversation, but they're not having a conversation about anything. They're literally talking about colours. And
just literal. Yeah.
And that's all it is. And that's all it ever should be. You know, when people say, "I don't see the colour of a skin," that's a lie. Of course you do. Unless you see in black and white, of course you do. And that isn't an issue. Seeing me as a black person is not an issue. It's what connotations that come with for you. If you think a certain way because of that, and you treat me in a certain way because of that, that, I guess, is where the issues lie. Walking down the street, and I felt it so much recently, and I haven't felt this since I was a teenager. And it is something that I think a lot of black people do feel, is when someone looks at you, are they looking at you in a certain way because of the colour of your skin? I've obviously grown up with brothers, and have five brothers who are all black, and I've worried about every single one of them because of how people may perceive them because they are black. And I've had the conversation with James. You know, our daughter, like we've just said, is really fair. And actually, to look at her, you might not even know that she's mixed race or mixed heritage. But then I do worry about what impact that will have on her life. And I hope that it has none. I've recently spoken up about how it's felt for me growing up, and feeling like there's been a lot of times when I felt like I couldn't do things, or people have told me that certain things are going to be harder because of the colour of the skin. I don't want that to ever be the case with Thea, and I don't want her to hear those same things in her own head that might limit her, that might make her feel like, oh, she might not get this job because someone doesn't like the look of her. Or you always worry about your kid coming home and saying that they've been bullied at school. Like, I remember my brother, he must have been 5 or 6, and he'd gone to play with one of our neighbours. They lived up the road. And he came back probably 5 minutes later. And I remember this so clearly. He doesn't remember it at all. I spoke to him about it the other day. And he came back, tears in his eyes. And he's like, "David doesn't want to play with me." And I was like, "Oh, why?" And he's like, he said, "Because I was black." And if he was 5 or 6, I must have been 10. And I still remember the feeling now, the rage that built up inside me, that someone had said that to my little brother. And my little brother was here crying.
Yeah.
And I went storming around to the house. I don't think I even told my mum. I went storming. I can't even remember what I said. I remember my mum hot heeling it after me. And
oh my God, I can just imagine you doing that.
And just being outraged by it. And that fear, I guess, of your child coming home and saying, "Someone has said something to me because of the colour of my skin," that additional layer of fear of someone bullying your child, essentially. But it also goes back to the point of, you know, we talk about this being history and it's not something that's around anymore. It is it's definitely here in our generation. I hope that it doesn't get passed on to the next. But I think the conversations that we're all having definitely opens up a different world of understanding what it may feel like to be on the other side of it.
When Thea was born and as she's grown older, like watching her grow up, how did you feel about the fact that she is so fair? Like, was there part of you that was like, oh, you know, I wish she was darker skin and was more like me? Or was there part of you that thought, oh, in a way, maybe I'm glad that her skin is fair because maybe she is less likely to be judged? Or did you not have any of those things?
I didn't really have any of those things until she really started talking, and James and I started having the conversation about what do we want to call Thea, because James says mixed heritage and I say mixed race. So we had those conversations, and it's only when it started coming up that I was like, I wonder if people will even see her as mixed race. But she has got curly hair. She's got really light eyes, but I think she did look like me. So at the time, yeah, I wasn't really worried. She's starting to look a lot more like James. And that doesn't make me worried from a colour point of view. It's just more James. He's got a big nose. but it never felt like an issue. And it's only really felt like something that we've spoken about in the last couple of weeks, because it has been something that we've just not been able to ignore. The conversation about race is everywhere, which is amazing, but it's also led to a lot of difficult conversations. I hope that she can just embrace who she is, and that's both sides of her heritage. That's the most important thing to me. I want her to know that she has a really rich, diverse culture because of the fact that she is a mixture of the two. She has friends and family that are obviously black and white. I don't think it's something that she will probably ever see as an issue until it's brought to her. And that's the only thing that I worry about. But she's beautiful and she's sassy as anything. So I have no fear that she's going to be able to hold her own if any of those conversations ever do come about.
I love that Lorraine went marching round to her friend's, her brother's so-called friend's house, because that is exactly what I would have done.
Yeah.
Like, fuming. Listening.
But you know what? It's so funny, isn't it? Because I have a few really good friends who are black, and obviously I see that their skin colour is different to mine, but I don't see them as different people to me. I feel like we're the same. And until you actually, you know, with everything that's gone on lately, so you actually have those conversations with your friends, you don't think that it's any different. So I didn't see her life necessarily as a mum as different than what I will experience as a mum, but you just don't think about those other things.
No. And I think that's the thing about opening up these conversations, isn't it? Because we should be thinking about these other things and realising that there is a difference.
Yeah. But her childbirth experience, not going to lie, does make me a bit nervous, because I'm quite scared of gas and air.
Yeah, when she was describing it, it made me feel really uneasy when she was describing the blood and not being taken seriously and things like that. And my first bit of gas and air, I was actually sick.
Yeah, see, this is one of the reasons I said to Dan, it's the control freak in me. I don't want anything that's going to make me feel like I'm out of control. And I also hate being sick. Like, it's not a phobia, but it's probably not far off of it. And so I'm like, well, what am I going to do?
I wasn't properly sick. And let me tell you that once I'd got the gist of it, boy, was I in there with the gas and air. And it was my best friend.
You loved the castle.
Yeah, I actually did. Like, I really did. And I actually got quite mad at Ed if the tube came off the thing, but that was because I was biting it so hard and it was actually me pulling it off. So I'd be like, put it back on!
You were loving it so much, you were eating the tube.
Yeah, yeah. But the gas and air, for me, lifesaver towards the end of labour, for sure.
It's weird because on one hand, I want to think about it and be like, yes, I agree and I want to do this. And in another, I'm like, I can't think about it now. But then I can't think about it at the time either.
But weirdly, I mean, I was very, very blasé, I think, about going into labour.
Mm.
I can see why people do want to make a plan and write a plan down. But for me, I was like, I'd seen and heard so many different stories that I kind of didn't want to write something down and get my heart set on it. So I was just like, I am just going to go with, I think I was almost a little bit excited.
Yeah, I am a bit.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, because I am a bit, but I think I might be setting myself up for a fall.
No, I think it's good to be excited. And I was excited. I felt like in the initial bit, I remember Mum saying to me, because she came to the hospital before Ed arrived because he was quite far away. I remember her saying to me that I was quite calm. And I was, but I had like butterflies in my tummy, but kind of like excited butterflies. Something big is happening and something amazing is happening, and I was excited.
But do you know what? I was excited and then you told me it's worse than having your hair brushed and now I'm not sure if I'm up for it. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it massively help us out, but it will guarantee that your ring won't be on fire and you won't get that perennial tear. Oh no, fresh as a daisy.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
Going on dates and pretending that you're fully able-bodied and kind of lying a little bit about the fact that you're only there to have a baby. Yeah, it just became this whole disingenuous mess.
Member Week is back at Lowe's with big savings for pros. Now through October 15th, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, building materials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings before they're gone. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.